Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I'm excited to welcome back to the show political and geoengineering author Ilana Freeland. Now, Ilana's fascinating and controversial book, Chemtrails, HAARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, is one of the classic works that exposes how covert technologies are being manipulated in our skies. Now, today, Ilana will be giving us a preview of her new book, The Space Fence, due out in early 2017. In it, she will illuminate a powerful web of programs that are being utilized to ionize the atmosphere, to prepare it for a full planetary lockdown. Are we ready to glimpse an unsettling vision of the future? Here we go. Ilana Freeland, The Space Fence and Full Planetary Lockdown.
The key idea for the space fence is about surveillance beyond comprehension, all the way down to the DNA. They want those nanobots in our bodies. These are the little towers inside us that will give complete control, not only over our body, but over our brains.
You know, the degree of secrecy from official sources that we've learned to live with in modern society is reaching a dysfunctional level between the public state and deep state covert operations. Programs that include geoengineering, weather manipulation, and attempts to ionize our atmosphere for the purposes of surveillance do exist, although they're completely ignored by mainstream media. The idea of an enormous space fence being built with public money but with no compelling explanation being given leads to the possibility that there are powerful reasons for hiding it. Are we witnessing a planetary lockdown? Let's go ask Ilana Freeland.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
And internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark Journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special fall discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist. Let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, hello everyone. I'm so excited to get into this episode on a subject not too many people know a whole lot about because it's been under the radar, and that is the space fence. It's a gigantic effort costing billions of dollars, and it has huge implications, so I'm going to go deep here today and discover what it's all about in part one. Of course, we're also deep in an election season, and the corporate media is trying to stop Trump from derailing their anointing of Hillary Clinton as president. But they keep having problems. Well, the best laid plans, as we know. Now, the WikiLeaks reports on Clinton's campaign manager, Podesta, openly discussing UFOs, though, that dovetails nicely with our episode today. Now, a quick reminder to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss any of the amazing shows we have coming up for you. Ilana, it's great to have you back here with us.
Oh, thank you.
Now, your first book on these topics caused some major ripples and was really so solidly researched by you that it lent a lot of weight and plausibility to what can easily become a very overhyped or too esoteric subject matter. namely geoengineering, chemtrails, and HARP technology. Now, the new book on the space fence sounds very cutting edge, and again, you're reaching into an area scientifically where an average person would just take a look at it and say, can that really be happening? So my question is, how do you respond to someone like that?
Well, this is what they're doing. There's no question. And now that, you know, I mean, that's why it's way more than I thought when I signed on to do the book.
Right.
I didn't know nearly what I know now, of course. This is how they're going to do the transhumanism. This is it. And they're going to do it straight down to our genetic level. You know, they had to get the heavy metals into us and the microprocessors and the sensors. They've released billions and billions and billions of sensors into the atmosphere with no public discussion, no nothing. So it's really what an amazing time to be alive, huh, Daniel?
Yes, absolutely.
And I mean, and you're like an archivist. You're archiving some of the most interesting people on that cutting edge. And I know that you know that, but I'm so glad you are. And you know, just make sure that you conserve them in ways that are not necessarily wireless.
Thank you. Yes. Well, actually, it's a great point that you're making here, which is we need to be able to access the information under any circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I see your work in similar terms, actually, because, you know, you're out there connecting the dots on these different elements that are rising right now. And at the same time, you're giving us an idea of what this is really all about. So I guess we could say that you're bringing together quite a diverse soup of factors in your research.
You know, this has to do with AI. It has to do with synthetic biology that Sophia Smallstorm talks about. And Clifford Carnicom, of course, still my good buddy, still sending me things. And we'll see each other twice this summer to have long conversations. I see myself as recording, witnessing this technology at this amazing turning point in history. But I do want people to understand we're up against something very organized, very scientific, and very dangerous. And, you know, that's what I try to do.
Yes. Well, what's great about that is that you have the ability, this kind of intellectual capability, to be able to do this powerful research and go through the implications and yet explain it in a way that's scientifically valid. But you also examine the implications from an open-minded and rational perspective. You know, you follow where the information takes you, and I think that's really important, actually, because we don't always get that in alternative research, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, that balancing of a very controversial subject matter with a foundation in really good facts and research. Very often, you know, we get a lot of hype around these subjects.
Right.
And that's a lot different than the kind of intellectual analysis that we really need.
And I would say that among the bad guys who have roped in all sorts of scientists who are on a need-to-know compartmentalized basis, Daniel, they don't know what they're doing. And they've signed confidentiality agreements so that they cannot speak, even if they do figure out what they're doing and they don't like it.
Right.
And then come the family threats. And then come who knows what. So they're operating in wedges, is how I see them. And whereas I am freer than they are.
Yes.
To really build the big picture, if I can just grab those pieces and see what they mean. It's like I'm now working on nanotechnology for the Space Fence book in the section on nanotechnology. And, you know, I didn't know that much about it. I've certainly run across the word a lot, and I certainly know what a nano is. You know, it's 1/1000th of a human hair diameter. It's tiny. And I know that we're breathing these things, and I know they've released millions, billions of these sensors. So, but now that I'm reading it and comparing this account with that account and this account with that, and it's reminding me of something else in the manuscript. And so, you know, I'm taking the very painstaking time to really put the pieces of the puzzle together. And that's my strength. You know, I'm not a great physicist. I'm not even though I have a biology background, I'm not a great biologist. But I am, because of my Steiner training in thinking, I am very good at building the big picture.
Well, that's a great point, actually. Your background as a Waldorf teacher and being familiar with anthroposophical themes and Steiner certainly gives your work a very unique profile, for sure. And I do see a lot of correlations now between the work that you're doing on subjects like chemtrails, for example, mm-hmm. and some of the trends that we see rising in American life, like forced vaccinations. You know, these seem like two parts of the same operation somehow.
Very connected. It's just another delivery system.
Right, exactly.
Just along with chemtrails and GMOs, they're all delivery systems. They want those nanobots in our bodies.
Okay.
And some of those nanobots, it's simply a matter of having hospital records and clinic records hacked into so that you can follow the progress of the illness this particular person is having. But it's also because these nanobots are wired for a wireless world and can be remotely triggered. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the key to the vaccinations as well. The chemtrails, yes. Clifford Carnicom has done amazing work on what he has collected from the chemtrails. And people can go to carnicominstitute.org and read over 100 papers he's written. And Clifford is a painstaking scientist, infuriatingly so sometimes. I'd like him to move faster, but he won't. He will do things over and over and over because he has no colleagues, really.
Right, right.
I mean, what a story that is. 186 alphabet soup agencies hit his site in the first 5 years that he was up to see what he had come up with regarding their creation. Mm-hmm. And yet now, that was 1999 to 2004, we're now 12 years ahead. He's still struggling on a shoestring budget. And continuing his research into the DNA of this cross-domain bacteria that some people name Morgellons. That's only one of the genetically engineered biological operations going on that will be somehow connected to the barium in the air that is highly conductive and great for optics, connected to being able to remotely mind control people as those nanoparticulates go beyond the blood-brain barrier and are ready to broadcast and receive in the brain and can be even programmed remotely to go to certain parts of the brain so that certain parts can be taken over remotely. So, you know, this is a brave new world.
Uh-huh.
This is a real brave new world. And I will treat the vaccinations and GMO foods as delivery systems in the Space Fence book. Because the key idea for the Space Fence, Daniel, is if you go on the net, all you're going to hear is, oh, yeah, we're bringing back the Space Fence. It was under the SDI program, the Strategic Defense Initiative, in the 80s. But, well, you know, now we're bringing it back because it's going to work better and we're building a site in the Philippines. And all we're going to do is count the garbage up in space so that we don't run into it. Well, sorry, folks. That is not what the Space
Fence is one heck of a cover story.
All about.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what is the Space Fence?
It is about surveillance beyond comprehension, all the way down to the DNA. And the surveillance is not, don't think satellites and things up in the sky. Think your cell towers and the Gwen towers and the NexRads across the nation. And now think of the little heavy metals inside your bloodstream that are turning your entire body into, it's always been an electric tower, our bodies. Our bodies are transmitters and receivers. But now, with the heavy metals in there that are highly conductive, and living in a wireless environment with masses of waves moving through us all the time, even in remote areas, we have to think that this is part of the surveillance system. These are the little towers inside us that will give complete control, not only over our body, but over our brains. And this is what they're heading toward. The space fence is very much connected to transhumanism and the so-called singularity that that they believe is coming.
Right.
They are working hard to transform the Earth plane into something unnatural, artificial. And really here, if I had the courage, I would have to discuss the Freemason Brotherhood,
oh, yeah,
which is very old and very large, very international, subject to degrees. The lower degrees have to please the higher degrees. And it's completely subverted our legal system, because if the judge is a Freemason and a Freemason Mason before him makes the sign of distress, he has to let this guy off. And however he does it, the Brotherhood doesn't care, even if his career is trashed because of it, he has to obey. So this Brotherhood is, to me, part of this picture of the transhumanism and the utilization of these sounding rockets going up, up, and spewing masses of aluminum oxide over all the populations below and in the lower atmosphere, in the troposphere, and going up into the stratosphere and spewing it up there as well. And finally, whatever is being spewed gets high above us, and this very definitely is part of the space fence, and it is then taken over by centrifugal force and will make a ring around the planet, just like Saturn has, just like Saturn. And that ring will be highly conductive. And in between, sandwiched between that ring of conductivity in space and now down in our atmosphere that has been totally ionized by the ionospheric heaters and radar, radio frequency, whatever, sandwiched between those two realms is us. That's us. And we are now controlled. And now, yes, they can definitely know when missiles are coming in. They could definitely have some sort of ingress to satellites that belong to other nations and corporations, because pretty soon it's going to all be corporate. And yet, really, what we're talking about here is full spectrum dominance, mm-hmm, from planet Earth, and think of below the soil too, right? Tomography. They're going way down. They're going down past the plates, maybe to the very core of the Earth. I don't know. But they want total control over that realm. And that ring that they're forming around the planet, that is something most people don't know about.
Right.
And the fact that it's a Saturnine ring, the only guy I know talking about that in combination with CERN, which, as you know, affects the magnetosphere every time it's fired up, is Anthony Patch.
Yes.
And Anthony Patch is my go-to guy for looking at the turning of the Earth into a Saturn, which is, by the way, sacred to the Freemasons. I don't know if you know that.
Yes, exactly.
And keeping this realm under tight surveillance, which includes genetic control.
Now, with the space fence, there was an earlier version of it, and some of that is declassified, and this was something that had to do with President Reagan's space initiative originally.
Well, with SDI.
Right. Right. So we're talking about 1985.
That was around with Reagan.
Yeah.
It came in with Reagan, Bush, and Cheney, George H.W. Bush. I call that the Reagan Troika. And then it under it was around under Clinton, the Clinton administration. It was called Ballistic Missile Defense, BMD. And then it did. It just sort of disappeared. And as Billy Hayes, my advisor from, you know, the Harp Man would say, it went black. And it did go black. And what they needed was Bernard Eastland's harp, the patent that would give them the keys to the kingdom by making the lower atmosphere electrical and turning it into an antenna or a battery. And that was what the HAARP experiments were primarily looking at. They were also, with all the power that HAARP had, which we had ionospheric heaters then, but not nearly with that kind of power, they were also exploring tomography and submarine communication, over the horizon communication, et cetera. All that was included. But really what they wanted was to grab some of that action up in the ionosphere, where all the ions are bouncing off each other, and bring it down to our level.
Yeah.
So that they would have an electrified lower atmosphere that all their wireless activities, their operations, could have full spectrum dominance in. And that's what, once that was achieved and they saw how to do that, then the space fence came back.
Interesting.
And then they even built a new one, you know, in the Philippines somewhere, Indonesia, I think. That's kind of why it went away. They didn't have it quite what they needed for full-on surveillance right down to the cellular level until they could ionize this atmosphere. And they needed to spend, a decade now to see what the to experiment with the weather engineering going on, learning to use the radio frequency and microwaves to move weather systems, to move the jet stream, the electric stream. So all of this has been going on, and now they know enough. And meanwhile, they're telling us, oh, we've got global warming, we've got climate change, we've got all these terrible things. We're thinking we might have to do some geoengineering, but we really hope we won't. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, it's already full-blown.
Right.
Full-blown. And now they bring the space fence because they're ready.
Well, that's fascinating. Now, here's an important thing for us to know. When will the space fence be fully operational for what they want it to do?
Well, what they needed to do after they shut HAARP down in 2013, and then they've reopened it now, supposedly, you know, it's not military anymore, but we all know differently. They needed to recalibrate everything with the space fence. So it is important that they've got this new installation for the space fence in Indonesia, and that they've got the data center set up in Utah with masses of underground floors, and who knows what they have there.
Bluffdale, right.
Now everything's being recalibrated to all pulse frequencies at the same rate, so that it's one giant machine. And I think that it's according to Billy Hayes, it's functional now.
Wow.
But it's got to still be tweaked here and there. And that may be ongoing, the tweaking, because, you know, life is change and planet Earth is change. You can't turn it entirely into a machine.
Right.
I think the space fence concept is like predictive programming we went through in the Terminator film with Skynet, right?
Yes, yes,
this exactly. This is Skynet.
Right, right, yeah. So if we really had to boil it down, and I know it's a multi-purpose, multi-layered endeavor, but what would you say is the core purpose behind their massive effort to construct the space fence and taking all this time with it since the Star Wars program, SDI, and Reagan, so over 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the main purpose behind it?
Well, what has been happening at the same time would be a way you could look at it. And what has been happening at the same time is we had several conferences last year, climate change conferences. In September, we had the Sustainable Development Conference in New York City. In November, December, we had the COP21 in Paris, which was where everybody supposedly sat down. And we've had lots of climate conferences where all sorts of things have been decided, and no one's done them, or at least the United States certainly hasn't done them.
Right.
But this one was different because they had all this in place, Daniel. They were ready for full global control.
Wow. Well, this is an interesting point, actually. So these meetings are taking place with other countries. So does that mean that they're in cahoots with us on this idea? Take someone like Putin, for example. He's certainly shown a real independence streak and shown a lot of defiance, for sure.
He has shown, yes, defiance, I would say, but he is also an elite. Let's face it.
Yes.
And that is the name of the game. It's all about class. It's all about genetic bloodlines. They are ready to do the lockdown. And that's how I look at the space fence, is we're in a planetary lockdown. Vaccinations will soon be required of all adults as well as children. You'll go to prison if you don't. We're moving into a form of fascism very similar to Darth Vader's Death Star scene. Of course, as in the Star Wars films, I haven't seen them in a long time, but I'll certainly never forget the first three. It was a huge, and then they called the SDI the Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all predictive programming. Rebels will rise, and of course, they'll have the surveillance capability to know every cellular move of any rebel alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I see it at this point. This is locked in with transhumanism, locked in with elite globalization, and soon we're going to have a global governor, I'm sure of it. This little dance going on over the EU, who knows how that'll turn out. Truthfully, I lived in the UK for 3 years. I never once felt that the UK was part of Europe.
Yeah.
You know, when I went to the continent, it was a whole different ballgame. The UK is like I always think of the Atlantic Alliance, which most people don't know exists either, between the United States and the UK and the other echelon surveillance English-speaking nations.
Right.
So this is dovetailing nicely with the global takeover and the sustainable development that all communities, my community is completely behind it. You know, the parks are changing and everything's, yes, you know, we're now we're a globe, we're not just a nation, and, you know, all that. And as many criticisms as people can make of nationhood, and certainly we've been conditioned to think of it as a problem of patriotism and, you know, wars. And Steiner said something interesting about nationhood, and that is that and they haven't been around that long, by the way.
Exactly.
Many nations are very new. It's sort of the eye of a people. It's them trying to live as an individual, as a nation. And if you think of it that way, and now we're all going to be melded together, and I think they'll keep the nations, but only as an address. That's all. It's just an address. And certainly the Constitution, well, they're not going to, you know, rescind it or anything or burn it in effigy or anything. They're just going to sort of ignore it.
Right, yeah.
Over there, it's historical. Very nice.
Yes, lovely.
So that's how I see it, is we're moving into globalization, perfect time for the space fence to get set up with its nice little ring around there that can be used for deep, deep surveillance.
Right. And you've mentioned surveillance that's right down to the DNA level. So that's a lot more up close and personal than tracking your smartphone, for example, in terms of control. So when we come back, we're going to look closer at what happens to society as this whole system is put in place, and how is the awareness factor in the general public around these topics going? You know, is it improving? Is it getting better? Are people seeing the dangers? We're going to have you answer that question. Last round of part one here with Ilana Freeland. Stay with us.
Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Subscribe now and you'll have access to the complete audio archives to download or stream at your convenience. Receive advanced updates and discounts on Dark Journalist events. Enjoy exclusive subscriber-only content. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special fall discount available for just $39 for one full year. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
They were sitting there filming, a little saucer came came flying over their heads, put down three little landing gear and landed right out on the dry lake bed. And they picked up their cameras and started over toward it, filming as they went. And when they got in fairly close to it, it lifted up, put the gear back in the wheel wells, tipped up, and took off at a great rate of speed.
Dark Journalist will go there.
The idea of an enormous space fence being built with public money but with no compelling explanation being given leads to the possibility that there are powerful reasons for hiding it.
Hidden technology.
So in other words, the possibility exists that you have here a machine that is manipulating magnetic fields on a planetary scale that has nothing to do with particle physics.
The black budget.
But there's no such thing as getting away from the corruption, because it is literally, it is now integrated into every economy in the globe.
Geoengineering.
I'm talking about right down to the DNA level. Imagine that you have now put microprocessors and sensors, along with everything else, into every human body.
For more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries, visit darkjournalist.com today. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with geoengineering researcher and author of Chemtrails Harp and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, Ilana Freeland. Now, she knows how to go deep in this research, and she really brings together information like almost no one has been able to up to this point on these very murky subjects. Now, the space fence and all the ramifications politically, economically, culturally, it's just staggering. And I'm delighted she's here to give us this insight before the book comes out. That is going to be an event, much better than any lame Netflix series, I can tell you. This is the real stuff. What is going on here? And it's great to have her here before the book comes out. Now, Ilana, let's switch this around a little bit and talk about public awareness. You know, let's start with your Chemtrails book. I mean, that really was a breakthrough, and it set off a lot of alarm bells, I'm sure, for many people. And it brought together the best of what we know about HARP technology, geoengineering, and we do see topics like this, and like chemtrails, coming up more and more. You know, it's sort of in the past year or so. Now, it's no longer completely off the table as a subject for discussion. That's important. It's still incredibly controversial, of course, but how do you think we're doing in terms of assimilating the information that's being put out generally, and not so much the alternative research people who know it, but the wider public in America and around the world?
Well, we're running a race against agencies like NASA and NOAA that are attempting to make it normalizing it in the schools, in their PR, and I mean, recently we had a picture of a suite at the Marriott Hotel with a huge chemtrailed sky mural over the bed. So the race is on between those who are normalizing it. Yeah, clouds have always been this way. Getting it out to the public that these are artificial plasma-ized clouds. They're being anthropomorphically made, and they have an agenda behind them. That's the race. I feel like I'm in a race. I'm constantly going through Facebook. I spend 2 or 3 hours every day on it. And I go through to make sure that people are getting it. And then I put in a comment, and, you know, it's like a classroom for me.
Sure.
Just in my tiny way. This is very tiny here, but I don't want dissemination being allowed under my watch that's not as accurate as I can make it. So I do see I would say, other than in my town where everybody is absolutely asleep, people are waking up to it, and it's really since December, since the COP21 in Paris, that I've seen a tremendous difference. And I've also seen, I'm sorry to say, an increase in what's being laid.
Oh.
And that's everywhere. I'm getting emails from Europe and South Africa and Iceland and across the United States and Hawaii. I'm not getting any from China or sometimes from Russia, but never China. Everybody's seeing more and seeing new ways of delivery. The delivery system is being changed all the way from cloaking the jets, doing the delivery so that you look at the front of the trail being laid and there's nothing there, to big dumps. Big, huge dumps that Harold Save, who is a wonderful activist and a friend from Gainesville, Florida, Harold is noticing that he thinks it's that they're using more C-130 tankers, and they're just dumping masses of chemicals. And the question being always with the activists is, how much is coming out through the engine from the fuel that we already know has many, many chemical additives for varying purposes? And how much is a supplementary system coming out ducts in the wings or on the sides of the engine or whatever? So, you know, that's an ongoing, because we're down here 6 miles below, right? We've got our binoculars or our cameras. We're looking and trying to see what, you know, what is going on. But we do know that that is no contrail. That is absolutely. There might be a little bit of water condensation in that trail, but primarily you're looking at chemicals, and those chemicals will then are then kind of zapped with some radio frequency, or maybe just what's already in our ionized atmosphere, and then they spread out. And sometimes you'll see them where they have even serrations in them, and then you know that something's being pulsed. A signal is being pulsed through those clouds in for communications or for whatever, to activate certain chemicals that were laid. This is a huge ongoing operation. And I think what I see regarding the normalizing of it, in even in old films, the trails are being changed to chemtrails. You know, natural clouds in the old films don't. Not there anymore. So this looks like a very long-term thing. And what they're really striving to do is to lay those trails and you can't see anything.
Uh-huh.
But suddenly you'll look up and, whoa, there's cloud cover. Or, whoa, look at those little puffy things. Where'd those come from? So this is an ongoing desire they have to make sure that the common people like us, who are watching the skies, you know, most people are not watching the skies, they're looking at their cell phone, those who are watching, to make it so that we don't see anything.
Yeah.
That's what they're aiming for, is how we see it, that we activists see it.
Right, right, absolutely. Well, this is interesting, actually, because this idea that we're ingesting these particles, and that makes us more suggestible, in a sense. So once we have these particles in us, perhaps we, here in the public, then become more suggestible, easier to influence, to accept this new type of official reality. Is that where we're going?
Yes, because they can pulse certain frequencies, and they can stack those frequencies. So it's not like, oh, well, there's a pulse, so the frequency is to make me blasé, to make me feel blasé. Mm-hmm. And I don't care about life, or make me depressed, or make me angry. Like, I think they used it in Ferguson, Missouri, during that racial episode we had. I suddenly saw the crowd absolutely change. And so you can pulse a frequency for anger. Mm-hmm. You can pulse a frequency for violence. You can pulse a frequency for I don't care. Who cares? One of our activists, Anne Fillmore, down in Oregon, has written a paper on, she has a PhD, she's written a paper on the lithium that she feels is being laid along the coast. And what would the lithium do? Well, they use lithium, it's very conductive, and they use it in rocket launches a lot. So, but it's expensive. It's more expensive than aluminum. But are they using it? This is the question we're pondering. Are they using it over certain cities along the coastal area of Oregon to make people simply, you know, chill out? I mean, that's what lithium does. What is it called? That disease that I can't remember now. Bipolar.
Oh, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And maybe that's what they're doing. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, it does seem with some of this that there's a kind of target on the Pacific Northwest. Now, do you think that's accurate?
Well, I don't know. I definitely know.
Well, I know you're over there.
They've used Oregon. Well, think of what they're doing to California, going in fifth year of drought.
Unbelievable.
And that is no accident. They are constantly bringing moisture in from the South Pacific. You can see it moving in, and it should go straight into California and moisten all the food, the breadbasket places, and San Francisco, etc. No, it's being shunted up north to get on the jet stream, which is parked right over Vancouver Island above me. And then headed east for various weather experiments. So we've noticed that for a long time. And then for Oregon, you can go back to the Russians' woodpecker, which was probably the first Tesla machine.
Yes.
That was operant back in the 70s. Who did they target? Well, they targeted Oregon. And they were able to raise the suicide rate in Eugene I can't remember the percentage, but it was very marked.
That's amazing.
So there's something about Oregon that makes it always used in this way. And I must admit, I don't have the answer to that, Daniel, but I have noticed it. Up here where I am, I'm sort of at the Watergate, I guess you would call it, of the jet stream north of me on Vancouver Island. So because here in Washington, everyone's accustomed to clouds, I think that's why people don't notice that the clouds have changed. They're not the same clouds as used to be up here.
Right.
And the weather system is all over the place. It's very mercurial. But I tend to think it's a soft blow here. My symptom that I get mostly is I'm stuffed up.
Hmm.
And that's very unusual for me because I don't eat dairy and haven't for many years. So when I get stuffed up, I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. It's not a cold, and it's not allergies. I don't have allergies. In fact, I don't even believe in allergies. So I think that they're chemicalizing us here for sure, but primarily whatever's being whooshed over us is sort of being carried north to the jet stream. This is my imagination. Plus, I'm between two mountain ranges, right? The Olympics and the Cascades.
Yes.
And that might have something to do with why it's siphoned off from here. And we don't get nearly what Oregon is getting.
Yes, it really is a growing danger and needs a much higher level of awareness. Of course, Fukushima and the nuclear fallout from that disaster are impacting the Pacific Northwest as well. So it's just incredible. Alana, amazing information. We'll end part one here and go deep in part two on who's calling the shots for the activation of the space fence and what the damage of ionizing the atmosphere can really mean for everyday living over the next few years. Now, subscribers will receive part two next week in their inbox. So this is the time to subscribe at darkjournalist.com. That's all of the high-quality audio files, HD video, and more importantly, you get the shows first. So that discount is amazing. It's just $39 a year. That's $325 a month. That's better than anything out there. You can't do that much longer. So go ahead and subscribe now. And part two with Alana Freeland, special exclusive here before her book comes out next year on the space fence. That's coming up for subscribers. And a very special election bombshell that you don't want to miss is also on the way. So Alana, thank you. Stay with us. Let's do part two right now.
All right, Daniel. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for joining me for this powerful episode with Alana Freeland on the space fence and full planetary lockdown. You can find more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.